Hey there, welcome to SaaS Unbound Podcast. I'm your host, Anna Dana, Head of Growth at SaaS Group, a serial acquirer buying wonderful SaaS businesses to take them to the next level. And here I chat with inspiring founders and experts to get an inside scoop on how they made their business success. And today with me is an inspiring founder, founder of SaaS Group, Tim Schumacher. And as always, we do the last episode together. So yeah, welcome.
Hey, so is it the last episode of season?
The last, yes.
Four, five?
Four. It's four, been okay. 200 episodes.
Wow. Oh my God.
I know. Yes, it's, wow, it went really fast. But yeah, we got some cool topics to discuss today. And, you know, we're just back from our annual retreat in Marrakesh, where we saw all the brands there, all the people that we could get to Morocco. And yeah, how do you feel, first of all? Good to be back? Inspired?
Definitely inspired. Yeah, it is this one time in the year when all the screen time gets traded into actual real connections. And you suddenly, you know, I mean, we've seen each other a few times, but there are a lot of people who I've never seen before. I've worked with them for months or even years, and I've never seen them. And yeah, the spirit is just great. Just bringing 300 people together for a week, that's magic.
Absolutely.
It's also exhausting.
It is.
It's also exhausting. One of our team members, he showed me, he has this fitness app to track through some heartbeat mechanisms. And he showed me his heartbeat curve yesterday, and it was like everything was fine. And then it was SaaS grouping, and it went like way into the red and back up after he returned. And he also said it was like great event, awesome food, awesome everything, but too little sleep, too much alcohol, just too much fun. But that curve, we should use it. You should use it for a post.
Yes, for sure. Join SaaS Group. It's too much fun, too much alcohol, great food. But yeah, just yesterday I was recording another episode with the founder, and I always ask about a hack at the end. And he was like, you know what? Hack is offsides. It's unbelievably expensive, but it's worth every penny to bring people together and just kind of get to know everyone.
Absolutely.
So I think we can back that up. But yeah, since we started talking about the retreat, and we're fully remote, and I think this is still something that a lot of people are trying to figure out. Like, we had an event in Romania, and somebody told me, like, this is great. Like, the culture of SaaS Group is super attractive and everything, but I don't see myself working remotely ever. Like, office is my thing. Like, I love the water cooler talk, and I love to kind of, even the commute is great for me, because I get this like kind of time where I'm just on my own in my head. So what do you think? How do we make it work? And how do we make sure that people who sometimes come from the office culture still strive in SaaS Group?
Yeah, great question. First of all, I think there's no right or wrong. A company can thrive in office culture as well as a company can thrive remotely. It requires different techniques. It requires different work culture. And also, it's not for everyone. Let's face it. I mean, I'm especially with very junior employees, for example, who are fresh out of college. I would put some question marks over remote. While I see people who've been in a job for 5 to 10 years, have stable environments in their private life, but also then, like you, for example, enjoy living somewhere else where it simply wouldn't be that easy to find an office job, but remotely works perfectly. So it has a lot of advantages, but it also does have some disadvantages. Also, loneliness can be quite profound. I mean, we saw that over COVID in particular, but just generally, for a lot of people, it's not the right thing. So everybody should really question him or herself, like, what's the right setup, and then see it as one alternative. What I don't think is that we're seeing a current backlash. There was obviously during COVID, everybody went remote. Some companies forced, everybody seemed to love it at the beginning. And now there's this backlash of, hey, let's get back into the office. And And to a certain extent, yes, it's good to bring people physically together, but also very often offices aren't inspiring ways of bringing people together. Just having an hour commute in the morning and an hour commute at night, statistics show that people are way more stressed. Happiness goes, I think it's a linear, like there's statistics that there's a linear correlation, inverse correlation between length of commute and happiness of people. But on the other hand, I think, yeah, it is good to have some ways of connecting. And as a remote company, we also need to find them. We have co-working spaces in some offices. We sometimes meet in befriended companies in the cities. There's travel. There's all sorts of things at the end of the day. Yeah, those things can actually, like a good mix can actually make it work perfectly. But it requires a real effort at the end of the day.
Yeah. Absolutely, on both sides, I think. But one more thing that we started talking kind of more and more serious about is diversity. And we now have, it's not super active, let's say, but it started, and I'm super happy about it, this Women of SaaS group kind of movement. We now have big plans on bringing more diversity into leadership teams. So if you can maybe elaborate on that a little bit as well, that would be great.
Yeah, sure. I mean, SaaS Group has always been a very diverse company, diverse in all ways, and nationalities, first and foremost, with, I think, people in all five continents, I think over 40 nationalities now. Secondly, functional. I think there's another aspect of diversity. I'm always very wary of companies where there are like three hardcore coders starting something, equally as three hardcore business salespeople. That's usually not the perfect mix. So you need to blend. But then, of course, also gender and other diversities, I think is makes a company stronger. And there, I would also say there's a connection with remote, because remote, of course, makes it easier for different nationalities to hire compared to if you're in an office, then you gravitate towards that nationality. Unless like you're in a super, super international spot. But even then, like if we would have an office in Berlin, probably still is a super international city, but it's still 60-70% of people would be German, most likely. And so, and you don't have that gravita in a remote company. But also, I think it is more family friendly. It lends itself to more diversity. So I think there's a connection. But it's something where we're noticing in the very male-dominated world of SaaS, we still need to make a conscious effort to it. And we feel that it makes the company stronger to have, in this case, also gender diversity on all levels of leadership. And we have at the moment at about 30%, 30% women in leadership. We want to increase that by 10 percentage points to roughly 40. And we feel that would be a good blend. Something where we're also making a conscious effort. For example, in talking to female founders, because so far we've never acquired a company with a female founder, unfortunately, and that's got to change.
All right, female founders out there, reach out to us. All right. So yeah, just kind of riding the wave of SaaS grouping, and just kind of want to share a little bit more of what we're doing there and how it's all organized. And this time we had this amazing extended opportunity to work together, because this is also very important when you have 22 brands that are so distributed and so different. One of the days that we had was a functional day where, apart from all the things, we had an AI track. And duh, let's talk about AI. Everyone does, so we should too. So it would be amazing if you could talk a little bit about, you know, the way we integrate AI into, you know, all kinds of automations within our workflows, and also the way maybe it changes the companies that we acquire and our interests in companies that have more AI or are more prone to be AI powered.
Yeah, it is the of course the big seismic shift we're seeing in the industry right now. And yeah, as you just alluded, I think there are different levels of AI. So we would call it level one AI, which you just alluded to, is really just starting to use AI everywhere, everywhere where it makes sense. I mean, there's, as with every hype cycle, there's also a lot of hype around it. And so not everything makes sense, but there are quite a few things where it really makes sense. Some examples in accounting, really matching the matching invoices with AI to the right close place and everything. Customer service would be another example, to pre-write emails, to fetch information, to still have a human look onto an email, but you can massively increase the speed of responses, make customers happier, and also become more productive, and actually let the customer service people spend real time with people in a way to get them on the phone, establish relationships, solve the tricky problems. But the like 80% of the stuff is pretty simple, and that stuff should be done by machines. And so in all those areas, there's development, of course, starting with things like Copilot, but also lots of other things where we can do more. And even in your own work, I started after the AI workshop, I started using an AI call tweet called Fixer. And it's great. It actually pre-writes emails of me, like my own emails in my inbox with pre-written responses. And I sometimes just have to change little things, and it definitely cuts, I would say, 50% of my email response time, which is pretty cool. And so there's lots of things in the usage of AI, and that's always what it starts with, because if you start using something, you learn it, and that's kind of level one, and we're doing this across a SaaS group in all the departments, really pushing that. And then there's level two, is kind of putting AI into the AI applications into the products. A great example is our Zendu brand, where I think there's Zenloop helps with user experience and data on user experience. And so what their AI can do is, of course, analyze things, summarize a lot of the findings, and then provide a much better level of insights, so making the product better. And then the third level of AI is really kind of embedding yourself into the new AI players, whether it's a ChatGPT store or it's becoming an AI-based business model yourself. And we're starting with this. We're starting to also make some acquisitions of custom GPTs, for example. So many founders out there who have some to sell, that's also of interest for us. But really kind of embedding our products into AI-based systems and ecosystems, that's kind of next level. And it kind of goes all ways, but that's, yeah, it's very much something we're quite focused on at the moment.
Okay, how cautious are we with AI? Like, say, you know, we have this all written on our website, right? We want PLG, we want 5+ years on the market, we want some product market fit and $2 to $10 million in ARR. Would we still prefer a company that's maybe a little safer, or now, because there is AI and there is this huge potential, we would, in a way, maybe give priority to like super fast growing AI tool that's been on the market for, I don't know, let's say 2 years, but is growing well, like, you know, there's the rule of 40 or even rule of 50 there. What do you think?
Well, we would look at it, and we could imagine buying a younger company as well. So our main criteria on the companies we buy, so the ones you mentioned, PLG, modest growth, 5 years plus, that's kind of the ideal setup. Also, people like very lean companies. But yeah, we've acquired companies who are younger. Like Scraper API was younger when we acquired it. I think it was 2 years old, and it's been doing great. We have had companies that weren't lean, but they were actually bloated, and we had to make them lean first. We have companies that aren't PLG. They're enterprise-based, and we're cautiously shifting them to be more PLG. So all of that is possible. And we would love to acquire a more AI-based company, a modern company. The tricky thing is there's a lot of venture capital flowing into this, and SaaS Group tends to be a company that is not buying companies at the height of a hype cycle, because it's just very, very expensive. And then as a VC, VCs, they try to find that unicorn. We're not trying to find unicorns. We're trying to find all those great companies out there, which we then can take to the next level. And and really work on for the next 10 years, whether or longer, whether they become a unicorn or not. They really don't have to become a unicorn. And that's also the downside of venture capital. It's a 0-1 game. If companies aren't a unicorn, like VCs get disinterested in them. And SaaS Group is very different here. And that, but that's long story short, that makes it harder for us to also pay what is paid in the market at the moment. But absolutely, we would look at that. And there are opportunities which would work very well, even if it's,
okay.
It's crazy, crazy hype at the moment.
Yeah, we're still interested. We'd like to look at you. But yeah, since I already mentioned the rule of 50, right? And like rule of 40 has been a benchmark that we really love at SaaS Group. But it's a lot of talk about rule of 50, just because, you know, AI is taking over and there is a lot that we can automate with it. So just, do we use it at all? And just kind of an addition to that question, do we still kind of have a priority of whether in the rule of 50 or 40, whatever you want to use here, the priority goes to profitability or growth? Like, would we look at the company that's growing 5% and is 35% profitable, or the other way around? Like, what would be the rule of thumb? What would be given kind of general?
We would look at both.
Okay.
I think the rule of 40 or 50, I mean, just generally adding two factors that have nothing to do with each other, namely growth and profitability, I think that's what I like about the rule of 40, because it shows the trade-off you have. And it shows that you can, as a company, make a conscious choice. Okay, we're going to decrease profitability, invest it in growth, or vice versa. We would look at both. We would look at a company that is not growing at all, but has 40% profit margin. Absolutely. We would love to look at this company, because there are sometimes ways to reignite growth. Very often, that's one of our specialties. We have a great marketing team. We have a lot of knowledge on pricing, for example. We can internationalize companies. Sometimes companies are just stuck in one country, but they have a great product. And once you internationalize, growth goes up again. So actually, profitability is a good base, because it shows they're lean and they're... So we would look at a 40-0 company, but we'd similar look at a 0-40 company. The company's just growing 40%. You're going to grow into profitability. And always, same as with growth, every company we look at, there are simple levers on how to increase profitability. Renegotiate some contracts, whether it's billing or hosting. It's little stuff. It's 1% here, 2% there, 5% there. So it's not that one thing, but it's always good that we come in with a fresh set of eyes, and then we can improve things. And so we would look either way. And if it's 20-20, fine. That's kind of a healthy middle. And of course, if it's more than 40, even better. Like some of our companies have a factor of 80 or 90, and they have 40% profitability and are growing at 40%. Those, of course, are our gems, but either one is fine. And of course, as always, when we buy companies, all of that is a factor of price. Of course, if you have a company that is even lower, if you have a company that's not growing and not profitable, even then we would look at it. But it of course means that the founders get less for it, which is okay though, because if you have a company that is not growing, like you're not potentially not personally growing, you don't take money out of it because there's no profitability. But still, there, like, if we see a path to get it to growth and profitability, then we might be the right buyer for it. So even then, we would look at it. And of course, we would also look at a company that's growing 50% and has 50% profitability, but those are rare.
So we'll basically just look at all of them.
Yeah.
Just for the sake of it.
Exactly. But it's always a trade-off on right. At the end of the day, price.
And I mean, shameless plug, we are going to release our M&A course fairly soon. So this is all going to be there, and we'll kind of explain how it works. And there was so much interest in that, by the way. We hosted this first two SaaS Connect events, one in Lisbon, one in Bucharest, just a couple of weeks ago. And the interest in like how it works and what kind of growth through acquisition we can provide to founders, it was enormous. And there were a lot of talks on, like, you know, once somebody came to me and they said, oh, so SaaS Group is an accelerator. And I was so personally offended. I was like, no, absolutely not. And then the more I kind of started thinking about it, I was like, why not? We do accelerate companies. We do bring them to profitability, right? So in a way, it works like this. And I even had a couple of feedbacks from founders who went to our events that they were a little bigger than our target and weren't looking for an acquisition, but they were just interested in, you know, the community and everything. And they said that if they were kind of younger and weren't sure what to do, like weren't in possession of like resources that they needed at the time to grow, like the way SaaS Group works would make a lot of sense. And I think you're right. Like it just makes sense for us to also look at the companies that are just profitable, because there is this huge central team that's there for a reason.
Yeah. And we have cases where we have really accelerated growth massively, mm-hmm. where companies were not growing or growing very little. And after we did a few changes, they were growing massively. And it doesn't always happen. Sometimes we can't do no magic, but in a good chunk of companies, it actually works. And I agree with you. Accelerator is not a bad term. I think it's just gotten a bad reputation because there are so many corporate accelerators. And they are almost the opposite. They're just the opposite of startup life and real acceleration. They were just kind of fancy corporate programs that did the opposite of accelerating people, that actually slowed them down. So I think that's why the term has gotten a bad rep.
All right. Okay. So what are we actually looking at in 2025? Like, what's the goal? Who is still the kind of the perfect profile for SaaS Group, and how many companies on average are we looking to acquire?
This episode is sponsored by Rewardful. Looking for new ways to find customers for your SaaS business? Consider building an affiliate program. Rewardful is the easiest affiliate tracking platform to set up, manage, and scale for SaaS companies. Building a successful affiliate program can be a little bit intimidating at first, and that's why Rewardful has taken what they've observed from their most successful customers' affiliate programs and distilled that into an exclusive online course. The exciting part? Their affiliate marketing course is absolutely free. Start the course at academy.rewardful.com. academy.rewardful.com. And turn your biggest fans into your best marketers.
So really not much has changed. We're looking, just like in the last 2 years, we're looking to acquire about 7 to 10 companies this year. Ideally, they're somewhere between 1 and 10 million in annual recurring revenue, although our real sweet spot, I would say, is more 2 to 5 million. In some exceptions, we might be looking at larger or smaller things, but really 1 to 10 billion is a rough benchmark. Ideally, product-led, ideally run by a small, efficient team. So kind of what we call the bootstrapper mindset. Customer base, ideally in Europe or the US, but where the companies sit, if they're remote, non-remote, all of that really doesn't matter that much. And of course, that's the ideal profile. And as always, it's probably a little bit like in dating. It's like there are always some things which don't work out, and that's okay. Like everything is fixable. Is sure, if the company isn't growing that much, then yeah, we can fix growth. If the company is maybe too small, we have a great hiring team and we know exactly how to scale teams. Opposite, if a company is bloated, which sometimes we see that founders, they stack things up and they have a hard time maybe making also some of the tougher calls. We can, together with them, develop a strategy. Is okay, how can we make the company leaner? And also by use of central services, sometimes you don't need a full-time HR person, for example, is if you're 10 people. Sometimes we see this, and then the better thing is, okay, maybe we move this HR person over to our central team. He or she can then cover three companies instead of one. And hey, you've cut the cost by 1/3 and still have that person on your team. also because we have great tooling and so those sorts of things. So everything is fluid there. Yeah, but those are the companies we'd like to look at, whether just pure SaaS or some AI in there, both fine.
Awesome. And, you know, I think it's something that we never really spoke about here. This is our, fourth episode together. And it kind of, I kind of got to thinking about it because we started to write an interview for The Starter Story, which is out soon as well. So check it out. But it's a story about founding SaaS Group, and you started it with some experience buying companies for Seedo.com already, but you also sold it after all. And I wanted to talk to you about your personal experience selling, because even if, you know, it was okay, good in a way, right? Everyone's happy at the end of the day, but apparently there was something that you wanted to change, or at least something that kind of gave you a bit of a leg up now to kind of have the empathy and having been in the shoes of the company being acquired, kind of differentiates you a little bit from the other acquirers. Anyway, if you can tell me a little bit about how the acquisition went, that would be great.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's really SaaS Group for me personally is a mix of the things I've experienced over my 20-year career as an internet entrepreneur. And Seedo was my first company. I started that right out of college. We got an early investor, a corporate investor, which is a company called United Internet. They run a domain hosting company, 1&1, and a few other ones that. And they're basically in Europe. They're what GoDaddy is in the US, so they're out there. The market leader in domains and hosting. And they were a great partner over all those years. And ultimately, they also ended up the ones to acquire us. And I think what I learned there is really like once you sell the company, it's not your company anymore. It's, I mean, it's that seems like commonplace. But as a founder, and that's kind of the point which made me really think it made a huge difference on whom you're dealing with. At the beginning, I dealt a lot with the founder there. He's become over the years somewhat of a mentor for me during that time. And I really loved working with those people. Like they were really like the founder of United Internet, the founder of 1&1. They're really great, great people that really made a difference. And to the contrary, later I had situations where there were people who were just more like hired supervisory board people, and that didn't work out. And so I think I really wanted with SaaS Group, I wanted to create something that is very founder friendly and also run by founders. And if I look at our board, but also our extended leadership team, we've got my co-founders there. They all of them founded stuff. They all know what it is to be in those shoes, but also the people we acquire, a lot of them play an important role and they're all founders there. A lot of them just know exactly what it is about. And we try to really keep this very low bureaucracy, very low frills. And that's what we mean by founder friendly. And that was part of what I wanted, what I really wanted to create. And that was directly related to my own experience as a founder back starting Seedo.com and ultimately selling it 10 years later.
That makes sense. All right, great. I think it's very important to just kind of get the backstory a little bit, because again, this is something that we experienced at SaaS Grouping, right? We decided this time it's going to be a bit more about people, a bit less about the company. So we brought quite a few people on stage to kind of let everyone know who they're working with. And it got like such an amazing feedback. And honestly, a lot of people have been telling me that watching episodes with you before being hired, before accepting a role, has been super amazing for them, because then you know who you're going to work with and this no asshole culture kind of becomes true. So yeah.
Yeah, well, I hope that it is helpful. And yeah, I mean, I think that's in the end what a DNA of a company is shaped by individual experiences. There's another experience. I want to share that one as well, because I think it's equally important. So after I left Seedo, I started another company, which is called IO, E-Y-E-O. It's a funny name because it's just four vowels. It'd be hard to pronounce. And but the people don't know it by the name of IO. They know it by the product, which is Adblock and Adblock Plus, the ad blockers. So we're the world leader in ad blocks. And this was the other main experience which really led me later to start SaaS Group, because there I didn't invent Adblock Plus, but I met the founder of Adblock Plus, a brilliant developer. He had launched this product back then in the Firefox store. It was actually before Chrome even existed. Hard to imagine, but that was the case. And he had this product. He had amassed millions of users, but he wasn't sure what to do with it. He had the feeling, okay, I'm onto something, but he didn't really want to start a company. It was a hobby project. It was basically a one man product at this stage, which is very typical of what we buy at SaaS Group. We've bought a few similar one man products, and so he got this to a stage. But then he needed and wanted someone who helps him take this to the next level and really do something with it. And I was like, well, this is awesome what you've built there. And again, he's like everything was so well thought through, but it just, you could see that he would hit a glass ceiling very soon. And fortunately we got along quite well, and then decided to start that company, build some structures, also gain revenue, which we then also needed to have a lot of legal fights, because otherwise he would have been dead a year later, because it was a bit of a heated legal topic as well, which ultimately we all won. But it was one of those things where you could see that it's a very different skill set of getting from zero to one, which I admire quite a bit, versus getting a company from one to 10 or one to 100. And I possess the latter skill, while he, like many other great developers, possess the skill of the early MVP. And it really needs those two things together. And if I look at the best acquisitions we've done at SaaS Group, Prerender, Scraper API, now I think Time Butler is a great example of a similar small team, Rewardful, a lot of those have been crafted by super small, very technical teams who then needed, to stick with your word, an accelerator, to take it to the next level. And that was the other, besides Cito, that was the other shaping event which really partially gave me the idea for SaaS Group, because it's been working so well. IO is now a company also of about 300 people, very well established, world market leader in ad blocking, and all of that came from this little open source project. And so I think that's, there's something we're replicating here at SaaS Group in regards to that story.
That's a pretty cool story. All right. What is that developer doing now?
He has a security blog. He's
out of curiosity.
Yeah. He's very much into security and especially browser security. Probably one of the smartest people on earth on that very peculiar topic. And he has a blog on that.
Okay. All right. Are we buying that anytime soon?
No, it's my blog. I think it's more of a hobby for him. But he's okay. Done some amazing research. But he's more of a real developer and researcher than a company starter. So yeah, people have obviously very different skills. But there's, if anyone who's interested, I did a TED talk once on the story of IO and Adblock Plus, and also all those legal fights that would go too far here. And maybe we can link it in the show notes. It's actually...
Yeah, absolutely. I watched that. It was very entertaining. Yeah. But thanks for sharing that. All right. Well, just a couple of questions, like for everybody else. 2024, what's been the biggest win, the biggest failure?
2024, the biggest win and the biggest failure. Oh, that's, now you're catching me off guard. I think the biggest win is, I would say, that we really also, SaaS Group itself needed to accelerate in a way, our own kind of building a system with the central teams to have the ability to actually accelerate companies at scale. That took us, I would say, 2 to 3 years to build. And I had the feeling that 2024 was the year when we actually, sure, not everything is perfect, but where we had an actual system that is working with great processes while still keeping a lot of flexibility for people, but also some very mundane things like cost allocation, which are inevitable in a bigger structure. It's like a service like marketing, for example, it can't be for free, but also having a system that is fairly simple yet effective for capital allocation, and having all those teams in all the right places. I think 24 was the year when we actually had this in place. And again, it's not perfect, never finished. But I think I would say that's the biggest win overall as a company.
Somebody just heard it's never finished from from the central teams, and they're like, oh no.
Well, everybody knows it's like nothing is finished. The world is always in flux, so nothing is ever finished. But I felt that we got it to a big, and the biggest failure, it's also hard because always not something we want to single out anyone. I mean, we did one or two acquisitions where I think in the end we should have had closer looks or being listening more to our heart. Is like, if you feel that something is wrong, then you shouldn't move ahead. And I think in our quest to really do those 7 to 10 acquisitions every year, which continues to be our goal, we, I think, broke our own rules a few times. And so we did one or two acquisitions, which we probably shouldn't have done. And that's okay. I mean, failure is in all respects is part of the game. And they're still not failures in a way, it's like completely written off or something. But still, we want to do acquisitions that make sense and that pay off, and that we can provide value opposed to just putting out fires. And we're redefining that process to make sure that we have
a
better success quota than we had for maybe the last 18 months. But we did some awesome acquisitions as well. So I think that's the flip side. But it's always important to listen to your heart. I mean, very similar with hires, by the way. It's like, if you have any yellow flags during the hiring process, like don't move ahead. Just wait. And I think the same applies to buying companies. If you have any yellow flags, just don't do it.
Yeah, I mean, having like one or two not so successful acquisitions out of 22, that's still very good statistics.
Yeah, it's okay. But it's, yeah.
It hurts a little. I know. All right. So the last question, again, always about a hack, right? And maybe you've got a new one this year or last year, something that helps you. I know that, I don't know, you can absolutely mention AI. I mean, you've recommended me a couple of tools that I love using, or anything else.
No, I think, it's definitely my two, maybe I'll mention those two productivity hacks. One is actually, I liked it so much that I invested as an angel investor. It's nothing to do with SaaS Group, but it's a tool called Jamie, and it's a meeting note taker. And I tried so many meeting note takers, and like most of them were absolute crap. And Jamie is brilliant for a couple of reasons. It's for one, it's an actual Windows or Mac application. So it sits in your desktop. It doesn't jump into the Google meeting or the Zoom meeting as a third participant, which is always very awkward. You can also record offline meetings. You just have a laptop running. You talk during a meeting. It works perfectly. It's multilingual. It has all those. Also, we use in our industry, we use a lot of jargon, lots of abbreviation, industry jargon, and it works perfectly with that, also with names. And it's just brilliant. Just a brilliant note taker.
It's running right now.
Is it running? So you haven't run?
Yes.
You didn't tell me. That's actually the real feature. Yeah. You don't have to tell the other side that you have it running, which is really
now you know.
Now I know, but for GDPR disclosure. No, I think you have to tell, but it's like fact is you don't. But it makes this product just a lot more usable because, it often feels very awkward if this note taker is coming in and makes people uncomfortable.
Right. But full disclosure, I don't just run it on everyone. Just podcasts.
Podcasts, yeah. No, that's fine. And that's the one which really made my life a lot easier because I'm not a good note taker. And it does full transcription. The transcription and the transcription then gets, so you have both. You have the transcription for the podcasting notes, and then you have the summary, and you can take that for the show notes and everything. I'm sure it makes your life a lot easier. So
yep,
cool. And the other one, that one is I didn't invest, but I learned about it, tried it, have it running for a week now, and I'm blown away, is called Fixer. It's an email AI that pre-writes emails based on based on email history. And what I like about it, it sits in Gmail. I've tried a lot of tools that sit outside of Gmail, and I'm very, very productive within my Gmail inbox with all those signatures and snoozing and other things, like my CRM sits in Gmail and lots of things. So I really don't want to go into a separate tool. What I like about Fixer, it sits right there, and it's amazing. It's amazing in how it pre-writes emails. I always have to change a little bit, but it saves 50% of my time, I would say. So pretty cool.
So if before you would reply to any email in like 40 seconds, now it's like 20. Okay, that's pretty cool. Those are great tools. At least I can totally back up Jamie, which is, yeah, pretty amazing. But yeah, okay. Thank you so much for the conversation. I mean, I am seriously looking forward to see it. The companies that we're going to acquire this year, if not 10, then cautious, good, solid 5.
Yeah. Better than crappy 10, absolutely. But yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, reach out to us if you want to talk, especially if you're a female founder. We would love to start acquiring companies that are led by great female leaders. But other than that, see you in 50 episodes, Tim.
Yeah, see you. When is that? Summer or no pressure?
Yeah, I think sometime over. No pressure. Summer over summer. Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, see you then.
See you then. And take care.
That was yet another awesome conversation on SaaS Unbound. We're always looking for new guests to share their experiences. We mostly talk with bootstrapped SaaS founders, and if you're one, reach out to me directly at anna@saas.group or find me on LinkedIn. If you're not bootstrapped or even not SaaS but have a great story to tell, we want to hear from you too. And obviously, SaaS Unbound wouldn't be possible without the SaaS Group, a founder-friendly private equity company that buys awesome businesses that people love to take them to even greater success. If you're thinking about selling your company or just exploring your options, feel free to visit saas.group, fill in the form, and expect a response in under 24 hours.